It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland and the Sound Mind broadcast every Tuesday here with Daniel. Good afternoon, Mr. Pryor.
Yes, good afternoon, Mark.
Good to see you once again. Hey, back to one of your favorite foundational topics this week. And that is communication and kind of the wondrous things it can do if we change the way we communicate to change behavior systems, patterns in our lives, and obviously how we get along with other people.
Yeah, and I'm sure that people, you know, listening to the show and actually listening to any kind of a psychology-based program, this idea of communication comes up a lot. And that's just simply because it's so important. And we've talked about it before here, and this is a little bit different slant on it. How the way that we communicate can actually change deeply entrenched family of origin relational dysfunctions, which we bring into relationships. And so the whole idea behind this program today and the topic today is primarily dealing with family situations and in specific marriage situations, although these things can interfere and be a factor in all of our relationships, even business relationships, employer-employee, and just friendships and even relationships and functions in the body of Christ. Because we are the self that we carry around and relate through is really a kind of an idea or a composite of input, the earliest input of from our family of origin, and then we sort of take that input, and it's kind of a basic model. And then as we go out as individuals into the world, we sort of hone it a bit and make changes here and there and come up with kind of a hybrid kind of manifestation of the way our parents were and then the way their parents were. And
so then you would say our communication style is very much environmental. It's nurture, not nature so much. Are some people like naturally a certain kind of communicator?
Yeah, I think, there is. There's a bit of genetics in it. The genetic part, though, it would be genetics in relationship to or in conjunction with environmental aspects. Say, for example, a person that is born very tall, people are going to experience that man or that woman or that boy or that girl, they're going to experience them a certain way and they're going to treat them a certain way. And so my treatment, the way people treat me, is going to factor into the way then I begin to present myself. So if you would say a person who is born very tall versus a person
like me, I was born tall.
Yeah.
And I did find that people treated me different than they treated other. I didn't get picked on much. I was kind of the gentle giant.
Right.
But see, if anybody really actually pushed my buttons, they'd find out I was kind of a wimp.
And people who are born small, you know, a shorter in stature people will treat them differently. Right. And that can turn out differently. You know, I have a friend who is born quite short and he's kind of used that almost to an advantage. And he's very endearing. He's become very popular musician.
I find a lot of times short people are kind of mean sometimes.
Well, that's the other
really
side of it.
That's
the other side of it. And that's where our that modeling that we get from our parents and then experiences that we have help. We use all of that, the modeling and the experience, to as I say, kind of hone for ourselves a sort of a personal hybrid that suits us best. We suppose that suits us best in establishing our sense of security and sense of safety. So yeah, sometimes the little guy is the bully, and that's his way of you know, establishing safety and security. But so that's how the family of origin, or as you were saying, the nature versus nurture, the way those two can interact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, in some of your foundational ideas here, you say communication is ourselves' way of engaging with the external environment. Getting back to your definition of how this deals with value and control. Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite words?
Mm-hmm. I want to look at communication as just, it's, in a very broad sense, it's the way that we're responding and interacting with our environment. And so everything about the way that we communicate, whether it's through verbal communication or body posture or language, or, you know, even the way that we dress and things we do in that way are in a way are a way of communicating, because they're a way of expressing the need for, let's say, value control and power, establishing value control and power. For example, you know, if I came here this morning or this afternoon in, you know, very expensive Italian attire, mm-hmm. and you'd say, "What's going on with Dan?" You know, right. Because and why would I be doing that? Well, I'd be doing that for, I'd be wanting to impress someone, or I'm going somewhere or something. I'm putting, you know, putting my best on, and all this kind of thing. The way we dress can even be a form of communication and a way of establishing value, control, and power. Meant to establish control and power. That's what you were getting at. Everything about the way we communicate is meant to establish value and power. Value in establishing the meaningful role that we each want to fulfill as unique persons. And that's back to the clothing example. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so there's the value part. The way that I communicate is it's a way of establishing a meaningful role that I want to fulfill as a person. And it's a way of it addresses control in having something to say about how people perceive me, and also about what events take place and how they affect me. Mm-hmm. So I can communicate my likes or dislikes or preferences. And so that, in a sense, has something to do about, you know, the events that take place in my life and the way that those affect me. So communication then, again, it's just a way, is our way of engaging our surrounding environment, our external environment. And it is about our personal sense of value control, which of course goes back to,
well, what do you mean here then? Is communication is a feedback loop for the self?
Yeah, remember,
never heard that before.
Well, remember that we've talked before about how that your experience of yourself is your experience of other people experiencing you.
Mm.
And so the feedback loop is that every time you communicate, there's an opportunity there to alter the person that you are, because, in a sense, when I'm communicating with someone and the style that I communicate in, if I communicate abruptly or harshly, so if married people listen up, or people that want to do well at work too, mm-hmm. if I communicate harshly or tone of voice or passive aggression comes to mind, how can you communicate with passive aggression? You know, that would be maybe a soft voice with a facial expression that says something different than the soft voice. You know, the soft voice might say, "I appreciate the way you're working here," and then the facial expression might give maybe something of impatience. The loop back would be that when I express myself, the person that's hearing that expression experiences me a certain way and then gives me immediate feedback through their tone of voice or through their response. Do they hang their head, or do they glare back, or so that I get feedback on the way that I communicated. And that feedback is also a thing that either affirms a good or a negative trait in me. So if I'm communicating with someone in a kind, sensitive way, or an understanding way, or if they're above me, supervising me, my boss, in a complicit way, if I'm communicating in a complicit way, then the feedback I get on that is one of acceptance and one of affirmation and one of appreciation. And so that that feedback loop tells me something about myself.
Well, this is all rooted in our need, you say, for security, mm-hmm. our communication styles.
Yeah, all of our behaviors are really rooted in our need for security, safety. So this kind of leads us into a discussion of the self. And so let's talk a little bit about the origin of that, which we've touched on a little bit earlier. We have, of course, the self that is, you know, maybe a real self. So this is the self that God is talking to when he says, "Mark, I'm talking to you." We don't want to get the idea that self is just kind of an idea out there, kind of free-floating idea, because we are individuals and we are valuable individuals, and so God knows us by name. Mm-hmm. And so there is, you know, when God says of David, "Man after man after my God's heart, a man after God. He's speaking about a specific individual. So I don't want to confuse our conceptual self with that. Now, this conceptual self, so what I'm referring to as a conceptual self, is the me that I'm kind of looking for. Everybody's, you know, trying to figure out who they are, empower. I'm trying to empower myself. And and we want to, that is not necessarily at all the entity that God is relating to, but it's a concept that I have. And it really is a concept that's ever in flux and changing because it is just a, it's just a feedback from the way that people experience me.
Well, it's a product of our early years and also subsequent experiences in our social interactions.
Yeah, again, back to the family of origin, that the first moment that I am experienced by my parents, I get immediate feedback on that. How do we get immediate feedback? Even before we're speaking, we get a tone of voice, the way we're touched, the way we're spoken to, when we can see at that early age that we can see, the facial expression that our parents have when they come to us and receive us or hold us, or those all feed into a sense of self and a sense of worth, a sense of self-worth. And so that family of origin, and then, of course, that kind of grows as we go through our, you know, toddler stage and into the early adolescent stage and come through there. And then we gain a lot from our family of origin, whether if we have siblings or not, but certainly through our parents, or probably talking to a lot of people who out there who grew up in foster homes. And so that would be your family of origin there. And that would, that again is a, has a lot of texture to it because those families are very diverse in many, many ways. But then we, as I said, we take those basic first experiences of ourselves and we try those out in the context of larger relationships and larger life experiences. And then we have an opportunity to either to hone those and change those somewhat. You know, I can be maybe more defensive, speak less. If my experience has told me that speaking gets me in trouble, I'll speak less. And maybe I become too introverted and or other people maybe feel that, you know, that speaking has given them a lot of power. And when they speak, they get their way. So that would change the way in which, a person develops.
Well, we're trying to learn how to communicate better, communicating from ourself, our origin of self. But also in our second half, we'll be looking at rewriting destructive memories and how a practice of that can help you to communicate better with other people and certainly in marriage and relationships at work and other places. So interesting discussion today with Daniel Pryor on the Sound Mind broadcast. Daniel, you also are a wonderful counselor and life coach. You help people get through all kinds of issues. If people need some help for their life, how do they get in touch with you?
Yes, the phone number is 425-778-6169. And also through the website, I can be emailed at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Yeah. Okay, and we will return with more of the Sound Mind broadcast and Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland tagging along as usual with Daniel Pryor here on the Sound Mind broadcast. And some real practical information this week, although kind of philosophical as well. Always feels like that with you, Daniel. You're such an intellect and you really think through a lot of these ideas. Communication, we always hear that kind of gets back to the basics of relating with others, particularly in marriage and maybe family relationships. You want to give us some tips on how to improve our communication this week with an interesting idea of how to rewrite destructive memories.
And yeah, and just before I go on, I want to make sure that I state clearly what we how we just wrapped up this the last segment here, and that the concept of self, again, is anchored in family of origin and also then subsequent life experiences. That was clear enough. Also to state that those do have to do with value, control, and power. All of our, as I stated, all of our behaviors are kind of rooted in the need for security and safety. And so the family of origin input and the factors that come from that relate to our sense of value, control, and power, even as little children. And then so do our subsequent experiences. And so this self that we've been talking about, it merges out of life and these life experiences with elements of confidence and self-appreciation, which everyone hopefully experiences, some confidence and some self-appreciation. But also we emerge out of this with a lot of fear and shame. And then that contradicts and actually cancels out, you know, the confidence and self-appreciation. Mm-hmm. And so these, this fear and shame, all oftentimes that is the thing that guides our sense of fear and shame, actually a lot of times guides the way that we communicate. And then those become the dysfunctional ways that we communicate. So there's a need to change the way that we communicate. And I think a lot of times people feel that I have to change who I am before I can change the way I communicate. But what we're trying to emphasize here in this broadcast is how that changing the way that we communicate can change the way that we are. Hmm. And so we don't have to wait until something happens and then we change and then we can communicate different. I run into a lot of in married couples where they're communicating a certain style because that's the way they learned and that's the way they became proficient at communicating that way. But it's dysfunctional and it's harmful to the marriage and they don't solve problems. They don't seem to get anywhere. They don't make any headway in getting to know one another better. And yet they treat communication as though it's a default that can't be changed. And
you run into that a lot. You were saying before we went on the air in marital sessions where, for instance, the husband would say, well, it's just the way I am. That's the way I grew up. I'm from New York and I do this, that, and the other. That doesn't solve anything.
I'm Irish, you know, so or Italian or, you know. So they'll say something and say, well, so that just predicts the way that I am instead of realizing that the way that I communicate. And remember, communication is the way that we engage our external world. So the way that I communicate, the way that I engage can actually change. I can use that to change the way that I am. So it can be altered. And so now what we want to talk about a little bit is how we alter that. And we talk about it as though we're rewriting destructive memories because the way that I communicate with people is kind of uses as its foundation, or as to say, it's rooted in these family of origin issues and life experiences, and again, a lot of times a response to fear and shame, or kind of our have a lot of fear and shame in them. So, rewriting the memories works a little bit like this. You're actually not able to reprogram your brain in that you can send, you know, put a chip in there. With a different memory and a different, that's not what we mean, but it kind of amounts to the same thing. And it's amazingly simple to do, to rewrite destructive memories that are dictating and reinforcing and reaffirming destructive behaviors and destructive communication. And the way that we can do this is simply by interacting differently with our environment, that is communicating differently.
Purposely, intentionally,
And
using a different method.
Right.
And see, I'm going to approach this communication with my wife right now in a different way than I have before. You're thoughtfully, not just reacting, but you're purposefully.
Yeah, as the Bible says, that a soft answer turns away wrath and grievous words stir up anger. So there's a very simple way of thinking.
Simple.
You know, if I communicate with this person in a certain way, I'm going to get this different response. Well, the different response then, that's going to be a feedback loop, and it's going to begin to affirm that better way of communicating. And once that feedback loop, once it kind of has its effect and it begins to reaffirm a better way, then even in the neurology of the brain, that better way of communicating begins to be associated with the much pleasant neurological event. And it becomes a new pattern of communication. And then that's really the way that people begin to perceive me. And then it's reinforced because of the impression I make on them, and then they reciprocate and they respond.
Well, you're saying, this is working. Yeah, I'm communicating this way now purposefully, and it's getting me some results.
Yeah, it changes in other experiences, and of course those create trust, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And that trust opens up a pathway to intimacy, that is even a deeper relationship and deeper, more personal sharing. And then what we're talking about is that personal sharing leads to healing and leads to grieving, leads to healing and leads to resolution of grieving. Because when in deeper sharing, I am telling, let's say, for example, of something that was hurtful to me some time back, and I'm telling a person about that, and then when I tell the person, their response is, and if I'm communicating properly, and then their response is one of empathy and concern and care and coming alongside, then what my brain does is it associates that this experience with this person when I was recounting this story was a positive experience. And so I have a neurological experience of kind of my story being embraced here in a sense and being understood and being heard and being felt. And so then when I recount, the next time I recount this story, believe it or not, the next time I recount this story, it has a little different neurological, it's a little different neurological experience because my brain has added to it the experience of being affirmed and cared for in the sharing of this. And so that now becomes part of that memory, not in detail. It's not as though that person were back there, but the neurological experiences. And so what we're actually doing is I'm actually healing and rewriting the memory. And in terms of the grieving, you know, as we've said before, grieving is the question, what did I lose and what do I get to keep? So even coming through a traumatic event and then sharing it, as they did with research recently with a lot of people who are now quite old, who survived death camps in Second World War. And finally, maybe for some of them, the first time they've ever been able to tell their story, and how that even in the telling of the story to a compassionate listening ear is calming these people down.
But that's the key, though. It needs to be to somebody who's willing to hear, because there's sometimes you get the reaction of, hey, TMI, too much, you know, and people, you know, time out, you know. So you do need to kind of feel your way.
Well, that's why it's this process that the way changing how others experience me. So I begin by changing the way that I communicate to people. And then that begins to create the way people experience me, changes the way they experience me, and then that builds towards trust. And then that opens paths of intimacy. And then that opens paths of more personal sharing. So there's a kind of a chain of operation there that we get to. But it begins with just using more positive thinking as a way of rewriting destructive memories. Then there's one other way, and that is by using changing behaviors as a way of rewriting destructive memories.
So what would you mean by this?
Well, of course, our beliefs are neurological too, and we've talked about how that a belief in the neurological sense is the most expedient neurological experience. So if I believe that you can't walk down the railroad track forever and ever without getting hit. And one of the things that is a clue is when you hear that train whistle and that getting louder. So there's a neurological experience that's associated with the loud honk of a train horn. But of course, so there's that's the belief about it. And it's basically a neurological experience. And we can have beliefs about salvation and hell and friends and love. There are people who their experience of love, I was hearing the testimony of a gal the other day who grew up and was a prostitute for most of her life and then became a Christian, and how that her belief about love was one thing before she was saved and a different thing after. So it's a different neurological experience. But true belief comes when the stated belief is integrated with that with the neurological experience through behavioral practice. Mm. So even though I say I believe that we should speak kindly and owe no man but to love, and I say I believe that, but people look at my life and say, "Boy, you sure don't act like it." So what I need to do is through behavior through acts of love associate that spoken stated belief with the actual experience and an actual neurological experience where actually serving people in the way that I say that I should actually becomes a pleasant neurological experience for me. So becoming this different person is another way of reframing those past memories.
Mm-hmm. Well, rewriting memories, destructive memories, to help you communicate better and making some positive changes in the way you interact with people, your spouse, your friends at work, it can really improve your life. And with some practical help on that, if you need some help, Daniel Pryor is a great life coach and counselor. He helps people with marital issues, individual issues, issues with kids. He would love to help you. How did people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, the phone number is 425-778-6169. And also I can be emailed through BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Your locations now, too, have changed a bit, Daniel. It used to be Bellevue and Edmonds, but now you have offices in Kirkland.
New office in Kirkland. So Kirkland and Edmonds.
Kirkland and Edmonds. So you can get in touch again with Daniel through his website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. And join us next time for another edition of Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.